Hey everybody, I'm Dave Sandell.
And I'm Caleb Gardner.
And this is the Best Album For podcast, a podcast where Caleb and I discuss the best album for getting work done at a coffee shop. So today's episode was a listener suggestion. My buddy Ted, who was at a coffee shop recently, and they were playing exclusively reggae covers of popular songs and bad reggae covers of popular songs. And he was dying inside slowly.
Subjected. Been there. I think I've had that exact thing happen, like being in a coffee shop with reggae covers playing. So
why is that a go-to for coffee shops?
I do not know. I think it's just a like, I don't think they really think about like, are we setting the mood for people to work? I think it's like, is this the right vibe for what we're trying to get out of our cafe? And if we want to be, you know, a cheap reggae cover cafe, then we're going to play cheap reggae covers.
But who invests the amount of money that it costs to start one of these coffee shops so that they can be a cheap reggae cover in?
I always think, who invests the amount of money to create all these terrible reggae covers of popular songs? Like, who wants this?
That's real.
Who asked for this?
Do you have a favorite reggae cover of a popular song?
Oh, God. No, I don't.
I thought you were searching your inventory.
I was genuinely searching. I was thinking, do I? No. I have a favorite of a lot of things. Maybe there is one somewhere in there. I mean, do you consider, okay, genuine question. Do you consider Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, reggae?
Oh, like the ukulele one?
Yes.
You know what's interesting is that
reggae,
no, it's
right?
not reggae. No. I'm sure, well, I don't know exactly what he was hearing, but I would not consider that reggae. I'm guessing it was much more dubby what he was listening to. Reggae isn't like Hawaiian. Yeah, it's an island.
But it's not really reggae.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But was that going to be your go-to? Because that song it's fine. It was really sweet.
It was the only other one that I could think of that was like a semi-decent, okay, like this is on par with maybe the original song in my enjoyment of it. It doesn't mean the original song is like a great song and that's a great song. It's like, you asked me a question, Dave. I was trying to find an answer.
I'm not going to subject the listeners to a cue right now of us dropping in some reggae music. But if you need to take a minute to go listen to that so you can...
You're getting a preview of the text chain between me and Dave where he's like... what about this? And I'm like, this? What about that? This? That's basically all we do back and forth all the time.
It's true. It's true. I'm telling you, this podcast was made partially so that I can list things on the air. I'm just going to list names of artists. I've got a big honorable mention list today. My honorable mention list runs like, I'm not going to list them all, but it runs like 40 deep. Like it's,
I believe that.
Because it's a genre. It's not really about the bands. It's about the genre. So I'll spare the
listener. I have strong feelings about the genre. And based on your pick, I have strong feelings about your pick that I'm very interested to get into. Because
excellent.
I think that we have approached this very differently.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to get into it. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's do it. Yeah. I actually think that so I should start with the caveat of I very rarely go to a coffee shop to get work done. That is not a place that I do well in. I don't flourish there. I get super distracted by everything that's happening. I find the seating very uncomfortable. I feel a lot of pressure to keep buying stuff. And I don't really drink coffee to begin with. So the things that I have to buy are either like tea, which fine, I don't really want to drink tea, but I'm willing to buy it so that I can keep using your Wi-Fi. But I don't get any enjoyment out of the tea. So I just largely stay away from coffee shops. So this was more of a mental exercise of, well, if I had to, and they had reggae music on, what would I toss on my headphones to drown it out and be able to actually get some work done?
So you are still thinking about what's in your headphones, not like what's playing.
Well,
right?
So I think we should talk about that. So you have a significant wealth of experience working in coffee shops, is my understanding.
Yeah.
So
I do.
So I think you should actually set the tone today. Like, what were your criteria you were thinking of as you went through this list?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I enjoy working in coffee shops. Like I enjoy the milieu. I like being around other people that I feel like are, you know, there to be creative. I like coffee. I'm a coffee drinker. So being at a coffee shop and having great coffee is great. I don't love that it makes me spend ungodly amounts of money to stay there. So that is one reason why I don't do it a lot currently. I don't just mean like they pressure you. Like some places obviously will pressure you to keep spending money in order to keep having the Wi-Fi and all that. I don't really love that vibe. But even if I'm there, I'm just going to spend money. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to keep buying coffee. I'm going to buy snacks, whatever. So, like, that part I don't love. But do I love the environment in general? Yes. Is it a productive environment for me? Usually, yeah.
What do you love about it?
I'm not a person that likes silence or, like, quiet when I work. You know, like, I don't know what it is about how my brain works, but I need that, like, ambient noise to have... Like, this is why I put noise or like music on in my office at home, right? Like, I need something or else I go crazy. Like, in college, I was the same way. Like, quiet library, no. Noisy coffee shop, I'm there. So when I am in a quiet library environment, I will often put on my headphones and attempt to create some kind of coffee shop like atmosphere for just me.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So you're trying to reproduce something that I'm trying to get away from.
A little bit, yeah.
That's a very interesting. That's a very interesting situation. I mean, when I was in college, I would attempt to work at the library. I would attempt to work at the student union, and you know, a whole host of other places, and they all were terrible. Like, I just struggled to get work done in any of those situations. I think I just need like me alone in a room where I can like disappear into the work. That's the only way I ever actually accomplished
it. So it sounds like just being in public in general is not great for you. Is that what you're trying
to say?
It's
not awesome. I mean, I like being in public in general, but not to get work done.
But not to get work done, exactly.
Yeah, I would really struggle with that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's a quiet room at our library that I think is essentially meant to be like a little space you can go to if you just need like a break from, you know, the noise of the world. But there's also like a prayer mat in there. And you know, there's... It strikes me sometimes when I reserve that little quiet room that maybe I'm not the target audience of the quiet room, but I sure love that quiet room.
I think what honestly keeps me at home working in my office now is that I'm a snob about my like screen setup. Now I'm like a double monitor. I like, you know what I mean? I've got all my technology. And when I go to a coffee shop, I'm either getting frustrated about the Wi-Fi connection and or... my like tiny little laptop screen. I'm like, oh, I just want my like setup. Have you ever seen a person come into a coffee shop and actually bring like a whole monitor setup with them? Have you been witness to this?
No. Has that happened to you?
100%. I have seen people walk into a coffee shop and set it up as if they are at their home office. And I've never been a brave enough or shameless enough soul to do that myself.
Okay, I have a couple questions for you. When you're at a coffee shop and you have to go to the bathroom, do you take your gear with you? Like, do you take your laptop with you? Or do you trust that it's going to be there when you get back?
This is a big struggle with coffee shop working. Usually, I will just leave it and come back and trust that it is a busy enough space and no one's just going to take my shit. But... If it is something super expensive, like if I've got my nice like MacBook there, I'm definitely nervous about just like leaving it around. So it definitely depends on the environment. Sometimes I will ask like a kind stranger to watch my things, or depending on the environment, like a waiter to watch my things. So it depends. Usually, honestly, the move is just like pee before you sit down, man. Like that's what I.
That's yeah, but then you're filling yourself full of coffees. But then
exactly, that's the problem with being there for a long time.
All right, so you're in the coffee shop. Do you find yourself more regularly leaving your headphones off and just listening to whatever's on the radio, or not the radio, whatever's on the sound system, and just like enjoying the atmospheric noise of people chatting or whatever else, or do you disappear into your headphones? And if you do you turn the noise canceling on?
Ooh, good question. Usually I will put my headphones on, but not even so much about the music. It's because I'll start like listening to other people's conversations, and that will be what distracts me. But if the conversation, like it's not really clear, like there's not someone sitting right next to me having a conversation that I need to drown out or something like that, and the music isn't terrible, I will kind of just like work in the coffee shop atmosphere.
So what types of music do you aim at? I'm not necessarily asking what your pick is here, but are you genre agnostic here? Do you have, you know, are all of your go-tos kind of similar sounding? What is your go-to stuff when you are at a coffee shop?
I would say, so this is actually where I think there's a disconnect between our picks today, because I think that I go for energy over the location. So I don't know that it matters when I'm at home or when I'm at a coffee shop. I'm looking for something. If I'm like looking to dig into work, I'm looking for something energetic and that's going to get me like, hell yeah, let's do this, you know, like really pumped up. And it becomes about like the music to match the energy for the work I want to do, not necessarily the music to match the location. Does that make sense?
I think so. I mean, I guess I can't necessarily relate, but I understand what you're saying. Do you aim for things that are instrumental, or are you fine hearing lyrics?
Sometimes. No, I'm actually generally fine hearing lyrics if I know the music well. I don't listen to new music when I'm trying to do work. I will pay a lot more attention to the music than I need to for like the work that I'm trying to do. If I'm at home or if I'm like doing shallow work, you know, like sending emails, something like that, then I might put on like a new album because I don't really need a lot of mental energy to focus on that stuff. But if I'm like digging into something, like trying to write, for example, no way. I cannot have like new music, new lyrics. That will completely distract me. I can put on old music that I know very well that just kind of fits like, you know, and I was going to say fits like an old blanket. That can't be the idiom. That is like,
well, it fits like a glove, but
fit.
But I'm just
mixing
that,
my metaphors.
I think an old blanket is an apt metaphor here. Like
yes.
it's
you wear
nice
it like an old blanket,
cozy.
Maybe. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wear it like an old blanket. I don't know if I've heard that one, but
I don't know.
It sounds right. It sounds good.
But you get what I'm saying is that it is comfortable and I don't have to put a lot of mental energy into it because I know it so well. And it's that music works well for me in a coffee shop setting, but it still can't be like low-key mellow. It's got to be like upbeat, energetic.
That's very different.
Important part of me for like working in general. So I think that is really coloring my like being in a coffee shop, because if I'm in a coffee shop, I'm still trying to kind of drown out people and get work done. And I need something that like is going to propel me forward. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I actually thought that this is probably our most relatable topic that we've covered, but also maybe the hardest one to find a universal recommendation for. I attempt to ignore my tastes when I make my long list. Like when I'm just like thinking about what's all the music that might potentially fit this topic. And then I kind of bring my taste into it from there. And I have this sense of the thing I'm going to pick today might not be for everyone. It probably isn't for everyone. It sounds like it's not for you. It sounds like we might be going there tonight. And then, you know, certainly some of the stuff that you sent me as like preliminary picks, I was like, I can never get any work done. I mean, I could do shallow work like you're talking about, but I can never get deep work done. You know, with any like, it's not necessarily they can't be up tempo, but it has to be, for me, it has to be steady and non-intrusive. Like it has to kind of create a background where I can generally ignore it, but it still has to like, I have to be able to put the work on top of it. And so it has to be at least get me into a like a headspace or a vibe where I'm going to be able to best get work done, you know. So it's a lot of electronic music, of course. Like I just need beats. I want like steady hip hop beats the whole time if I can. And you know, as long as the music that's being built on top of those hip hop beats isn't super annoying and you know attention grabbing, I can generally let it fade into the background, which is what I'm aiming for. Unless I'm making something so specific that I want something, you know, like a deep, dark, classical, haunting piece of music. You know, there's certainly times that I reach for those things, but that's not coffee shop work. That's like deep in a writing work or something like that.
Yeah, I hear that. And your pick certainly fits that, what you were just like describing as your criteria. And I will actually preview. I actually really liked it.
Oh, okay.
But not for this topic.
Okay, well, let me jump into my pick. I actually don't have a ton to say about it. So I'm going to pick tonight Mark Farina's Mushroom Jazz Volume 4. All right, fine. Now, this is a compilation record that he put together with some of his stuff and then some of other people's stuff. And it's all mixed together in a way that you can kind of press play and it never will really come to a stop. It'll just play continuously. And in fact, if you go find these albums on like Apple Music or whatever, they're actually presented often as one long continuous mix, which I really appreciate because I can't skip ahead if I wanted to. Like I can't like just, I can't get to a place where I'm like, ah, this song's annoying. Let me just press next. I'd have to like go search for something, in which case I just say, forget it. I'll just keep listening to it. It's fine. And you know, ultimately it moves on. But this is a collection of Mark Farina's stuff that he started doing in the early 90s. It was born out of like house music and acid jazz and down tempo music that he was creating as not necessarily an antidote to the other house music that was happening in Chicago at the time and in San Francisco. I think a lot of this stuff was made in San Francisco. Not necessarily as an antidote to that, but as sort of another alternative. He would go to these houses or these warehouses or whatever he was invited to, whatever club space he was in, would often have multiple rooms going. And the multiple rooms would be playing different types of music. And almost all the rooms were playing house music. And so when he was invited to take over a room, he said, I don't really want to just play more house music. Let me, create something that's something a little bit different that people can come in and kind of take a break to. So they would come in, they'd sit on beanbag chairs and they'd, consume whatever things they were consuming. And they would just kind of chill out for a minute to this type of music. And then they'd be able to go back in and dance and do whatever.
And that's how it got its title, right?
Well, that's right, actually. That. Yep. Yeah. So he was definitely into psychedelics and things like that. And he created this style called mushroom jazz. And eventually he didn't have the spaces to make these 8-10 hour sets in anymore. And so I think my understanding is he started putting together as mixtapes and selling in places and ultimately became kind of this long gestating series. I think there's like 8 volumes at this point. And all of them are, to my ears, almost indistinguishable from the others. I'm picking number 4 because that's the first one I heard and it's the one I reach for because I'm nostalgic for it.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But there's nothing. I think volume 4 is probably where he, I think it's his best continuous mix. But you put on volume 1. I don't even know if I could tell you it was volume 1 and not volume 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can kind of throw any of these on and that's kind of nice. You can make a playlist of all 8 volumes and just let it play all day long. And I reach for this stuff in a lot of different settings. But that kind of coffee shop, need to get work done, need to like let the background noise dial down a little bit. Just need to kind of sink into my work. I heard this guy talk one time about the way he does work is he's a deep sea diver and it takes him hours to get down to the bottom area of the deep sea where he's actually going to find the treasures. And it takes him so long to get down there that if he's interrupted, he has to come, if somebody knocks on the door, he has to like come all the way back up to the surface and answer that question. That might take it might take 2 minutes, but then it takes several more hours to get back down to where he was. And I think that's kind of how I work. I need like a long period of being in a groove before I really hit the sweet stuff. And so this music just allows me to go there. Maybe a little bit quicker even. I might even be able to get there a little bit quicker because it's familiar and it's old. This music does not sound current or modern in any sense. This sounds like the music you heard, in any hip place in the early 2000s.
Yeah, but that's what I loved about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
Very nostalgic.
Absolutely. And, there's a whole, I'm going to do an honorable mention list later. There's a whole, there's 20, 30, 40 groups from the early 2000s that were making kind of down-tempo music that I really love. And I could just put any of them on in these coffee shop settings and that would be fine. But the thing that I'd find myself reaching for now, I don't know if you, are you familiar with lo-fi hip-hop beats that you can study to on YouTube?
Oh yeah, totally.
So I reach for that more than most things. Like that's, if I just need to get some work done, I'll often just hit play on the YouTube video that's been, I think now they've been disrupted a few times, but at one point they had been continuously going for years and it amassed millions of views, 100,000 at a time or something like that, or 20,000 at a time. And I just find that this music is not challenging. it's right there in the title. It's lo-fi hip hop radio beats. There's no real meat on the bone. there's a Reddit board where people just constantly are throwing more and more stuff up that they're creating in their homes. It does not seem like the barrier of entry is very high, you know, to create something that sounds decent enough to get thrown into that mix. And I really respond to that type of music when I'm in that, like, just need to get something done place. So this is like kind of in my head, the birthplace of that, this mushroom jazz mix. To my ears, sounds like the beginning of what would eventually become this lo-fi hip-hop kind of jazzy mix that a lot of people
reached to. Yeah, that makes sense. Like the ancestor of it.
Yeah, I think so. And so that was my pick. I got to admit, though, I just can't remember the last time I went to a coffee shop and tried this out. So this is a better one for, like, that's, you know, best album for getting stuff done in my room than getting stuff done in a coffee shop. That being said, certainly I've done this before at a coffee shop, and it's been fine.
I feel like this is so betraying you and I's different working styles, too. It's fascinating. Yeah. Because my follow-up question naturally is, can you work with things with lyrics, or do you always aim for things that don't have any words at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can. There can't be a distinct voice, for sure. I'm having trouble answering that question because I have a million examples of artists that I listen to sometimes that have lyrics. And so for me to put a blanket statement out there that no, I need to not have lyrics would be incorrect. But I will say that I get distracted by it. Like I get pulled in by the lyrics and I get pulled in by the singing in ways that I don't get pulled in, you know, by this kind of slow, steady. You know, it's interesting because your pick is going to be also instrumental, but there's so much liveliness to it and it's moving and constantly shifting and changing that I would get so distracted by that. Like, it would be hard not to just stop and listen to the music. And so I tend to go for stuff that is just non-threatening. So the vocals are non-threatening.
That's funny.
You know, I think about, like, you know, there's a lot of artists that just remix other people's work, and I find their style to be so compelling that I just sort of amass these huge playlists of all of their remixes. And some of them have created albums, you know, album length releases of their remixes. I'm thinking about like Kruder and Dorfmeister, or, you know, DJ Cozy, who's like my, you know, one of my three or four favorite musicians of all time. And I can kind of listen to their stuff because the voice becomes an instrument. The voice isn't there to be a voice. It's there to just be one of many things. I also probably can put on stuff that I deeply love. There's, you know, there's older albums that I love, like Radiohead, that I've heard those lyrics so many times that, you know, they don't necessarily distract me. I don't get pulled in as easily by them. So I guess I can have lyrics, but I prefer not. I mean, I sort of search for stuff and catalog it. You know, with I can throw this on sometime because there's no lyrics.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I don't know that I necessarily default to no lyrics usually, but I find that the music that I will put on while I'm working sometimes naturally has no lyrics, because like this album, and it's not, I'm not putting it on because it has no lyrics. I'm putting it on because it's got the kind of energy I'm looking for. But I do think that I probably listen to music without lyrics more often when I'm looking for that vibe in general. And there's like a certain situations where I will look for that kind of music, but they're kind of few and far between.
So this album or albums like it, you said you probably wouldn't put on in this kind of get work done in a coffee shop setting. So why? Like, tell me why.
No, well, and the reason, it's too continuous. This is what's, so there's two reasons. One is I find the energy to be so laid back. Like my first thought when I was listening to this is, oh my God, I love this. But like, I need to be drinking scotch and playing poker with my friends. You know, like I don't need to.
That'd be a cool room.
Right. And I need to be doing that. I couldn't get work done. Like I'm too, like, this is too laid back for me. So that was the main reason. And then the other is related to that is you're right. The tempo is just, it's so continuous that I think I'd actually get more distracted by that, if that makes sense. Like, after a while, I would be like, okay, well, I've heard this for a long time. Now I need to put something else on, you know?
If I could just have, and one of the things I like doing is just putting this on for 8 hours, like just, you know, just let this run the whole workday.
Wow.
And that's heaven, because I just, it's going, you know, it's always there. It's always, yeah. if I'm at a breaking point where I just need a minute, you know, I'm stuck. I can't think through something. If I pause, I'm not going to be distracted by music, but it's pleasant enough to like listen to for a few minutes.
Do you actually go like 8 hours uninterrupted on some work days? I was going to say like, well, that would be so impressive.
The only version of that was when I was working at the church. I had a thousand hats that I wore there, and it was really easy. I got tuned into this concept of urgent work and important work. And there was just always urgent work. Like there was urgent work all the time, every day, enough to fill 3 or 4 full-time jobs. And so I could go weeks or even months without ever hitting the important work that would actually help, you know, the church down the road, or help my, you know, my workflow down the road. I can go months without touching that stuff because there's so much urgent stuff. So eventually I decided that Thursdays were going to be my important day, and where I was essentially going to build in like a half hour at the beginning of the day for urgent work that like just absolutely had to be done, like, you know, respond to an email, whatever it was. And then I would build in like, you know, a little bit of time right when I went to lunch, and then a little bit of time at the end of the day. But otherwise the whole day was blocked off for important work, and I just didn't allow myself to touch any of the urgent work. And those days I would sometimes, you know, 9:30 press play on something, and you know, it would still be playing at 4 p.m.
Wow.
Because I was just in it.
Yeah.
I, you know, that was my intention. I probably had like 12 of those days total in 10 years or 12 years, however right. long I was there.
Yeah, those are rare for any of us. I've heard of that concept, but I've always known it as deep work versus shallow work, which I think goes back to your friend's metaphor of like diving, right? Like going down into it and then being pulled back out and having to go back deep again.
I just want to name. Yeah. He's not my friend. He's a major author. I've never met him.
You're very Donald good Miller. Friend.
Yeah, my very That's good really friend funny. Donald Miller.
Your bestie. Yeah. Anyway,
so I have so much to say about your pick, and none right. of it has to do anything with working. So I want to talk about it in the right context first, and then I just want to have a really fun conversation about it for like 10 minutes. So let's switch over to your pick because I'm excited.
Yeah, let's do it. So along those lines of like looking for the right energy, I picked Birth of the Cool by Miles Davis. Which I think is probably my second favorite Miles Davis album behind Kind of Blue, but it's like I have a hard time picking between them because they're so different vibes, and so different like contexts in which you could listen to it. But I think I came to Kind of Blue first. Like I got to give some context for like how I got into Miles Davis and really jazz in general. Like it was really one of those like discovery periods in, I think it was in college. It might have been late high school, but I'm pretty sure it was college, where I was just like, I have to like jazz. I just have to. You know, like I was like, I love music. I don't know much about jazz. I need some kind of entry point. What's a good entry point? Oh, maybe like the best-selling jazz record ever. And, sure. You know, I always thought Miles Davis was cool as hell, even though I didn't know much about him. So I kind of like went down the rabbit hole of Miles Davis first, put Kind of Blue on, instantly fell in love with it. And then like spent a not insignificant time. Yeah, this had to be my freshman year because now I'm getting memories about it. Like a not insignificant amount of time going down the rabbit hole of Miles Davis, in particular jazz in general, and not just like instrumental jazz, but like vocal jazz, like Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, you know, like the Frank Sinatra. So I think Birth of the Cool I've probably put on the most often because I love it so much in this work context. Like it starts off with Move, which is just so aptly titled and so energetic and so like in your face right away. And just so like such a good like that's what I'm looking for, like cornerstone of this like cool jazz, like early 50s like feel, right? Like you feel like you're supposed to be like snapping your fingers in the back of some kind of smoky, you know, jazz club when you're listening to Birth of the Cool. It was so definitive, like it's such a definitive album for the 1950s and for jazz in general. And it, and just to give you a little bit of history, it was recorded in three sessions from 1949 to 1950, but not actually released as Birth of the Cool, the LP, until 1957. So it was released kind of in individual chunks up until then. And it was the first kind of quote-unquote cool jazz record, which was kind of running contrary to a lot of the East Coast feels in terms of like bebop and Latin jazz in New York City. So it really became, again, a defining album of the decade.
Have you ever gone back and listened to the bebop stuff?
Sometimes, yeah.
I like really struggle with it. It is so fast and so intense. And it's, I mean, they're amazing musicians, but it's so fast that I needed this like cool era Miles Davis just to slow it down a little bit. Yeah. This is like definitely my wavelength.
But it's still flavors of that, right? Like that's what I like with Move, right? Like it's just, it is very fast, but you're right that this does like portend what would end up becoming the Miles Davis of the kind of blue era. But I don't know. I'm really very few things make me want to live in the 1950s. Let's just be honest. But being around when Miles Davis was playing this, oh my God.
Yeah. Dream. I think Miles Davis would probably prefer not to have to have lived in the 1950s, but
right. No kidding.
But it'd be fun to see him.
Anyway. I mean, I think that I've always been a fan of Miles Davis ever since then, and have gone down deep in his catalog in lots of ways. And he got super experimental, and like he just had so many different eras, like just wild. But I still think, I mean, call me basic, but I still think this era might have been my favorite.
Hmm. I remember very vividly getting on the corner for Christmas one year, and like sitting on my grandma's couch after they'd gone to bed, and putting my headphones on and listening on the corner. I never heard it before. And just being like, whoa, this is new and different. And I love it. And it was, you know, at that point, 40, 50 years old.
Yeah.
But it felt so like,
new,
modern and ahead of its time and futuristic even then. Like it was just wild. I loved all the iterations of Miles Davis. Kind of Blue also, you know, an easy top 20 record for me. It's, you know, just I've just lived with it for so long. I've lived with it since I was a teenager, even before that. And I started listening to jazz music pretty early on because it was, I might have already told this story, but it's essentially the only thing available at our public library. And at our public library, we could check out music. And so I would just check out dozens of CDs. So I guess it must've been like high school when I really dove into this. You know, I would just check out dozens of CDs at a time, and it was either classical music or jazz music. And I didn't at the time have, I just didn't have the capacity to appreciate classical music the way that I could now. But I really got jazz. And so I would just come home with dozens of, you know, Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker and, you know, Thelonious Monk records or CDs. And I would just play them all and just get this like kind of haphazard musical history lesson. And I would go on like, you know, AOL and try to piece together when this stuff came out and, you know, what the lineage was and all of those things. Awesome. But when I found Kind of Blue, you know, like it does for everybody, that record is one of the best selling albums of all time. And it has not lost a step. Like it is not diminished by that fact. Like most albums that are that wildly popular and have hit that many people have usually lost something in the translation. Like we can't really appreciate what makes them amazing anymore because they've taken on a life of their own. Yeah. I actually think Kind of Blue is the like clear exception to that, where it's still perfect. Like it's still, there's still nothing better. And I feel like for every other best-selling album of all time, there's tons of things that were better that just didn't sell as many copies.
Sure.
Kind of Blue's it though. But for Birth of the Cool, I can't imagine going to a coffee shop and getting anything done while these guys like wail on their horns.
Well, yeah, if they were playing live.
No, I'm saying not. Even as on my headphones, like I just can't imagine that.
That's funny. I mean, I think this just comes down to the different working styles. Like I think my days end up being structured like, and you know this, you've seen my calendar. Like I've got so many meetings and like so many things demanding my time that when I do have that like precious hour that I've got to go in, dive down deep fast and get a lot done in a short amount of time. I'm looking for something to like give me, I'm looking for a shot of espresso. This is the thing. I'm looking for a shot of espresso and I feel like mushroom jazz was like decaf. I'm not looking for decaf right
now. It's like sleepy time tea.
Exactly.
Chamomile in the middle of your day.
Yeah. but I mean, I also list, I like will reach for like hardcore punk. Like these are like, you know, I'm really am looking for that like shot of energy when I work. So like that, these are the kind of things I reach for.
I was trying to imagine why this record, Mushroom Jazz, stuck out to me as perfect for a coffee shop specifically. And I was trying to imagine, would I like it if it was playing ambiently in the coffee shop? And I don't 100% know that I would. I feel like that coffee shop would be trying to be hip in a way that I would be annoyed with. But it actually does feel like this is the right space for it. Like the right space for it is communal. And yeah, the right space for it is like, okay, let's just relax for a minute. And, you know, for me, relaxing and like being relaxed and getting things done is often a really nice space to be in. If I'm not stressed, if I'm just like enjoying the work and, you know, maybe alive, like lively, but not necessarily like manic, that's a really good spot for me to be in. And so if I do need to go to a coffee shop and get some work done, which I do have to do from time to time, this is a nice thing to have on as I get those things done. If you went into a coffee shop and they were playing Birth of the Cool or anything like it, over the sound system, would that be a positive thing for you?
100%. Yeah, yeah. I would be like, yes, this is my vibe. Let's do it. And I think if they were playing Mushroom Jazz, I'd be like, oh, this is awesome. This is great. And then I'd put something more energetic in my headphones. But I don't necessarily see it as like not appropriate for that situation. It's just like, because you're trying to create a relaxing communal vibe. But like, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put my thing in my headphones and rage and drown all you out so I can get some work done as fast as possible.
So you're writing a book and listening to Birth of the Cool.
100%. Yes. Did it many times.
That's so fascinating to me, the way that your mind can process all of those things.
I think the two things I probably listened to, honestly, the most while I was writing my book were Birth of the Cool or Minor Threat. Those were the two. Those were my probably two go-to writing albums.
So when you pull, you know, Birth of the Cool in, do you feel like it's aiding your work in a meaningful way? Like, it's, are you able to achieve something or like reach for something that you wouldn't otherwise be able to? Do you know what I'm asking?
That's such a good question. Is it aiding me in a way that is helping me reach for something that I wouldn't have reached for otherwise? I don't know that that's the case. I just think it's helping me like get in the right mindset to do it faster. I mean, I think that I know I keep saying that. I know I keep saying that. But one thing I've learned about myself, especially like learning about my ADHD, is that I've always used urgency as a driver for like focus. Like people that have brains like me will literally wait till the last minute because that's when we are the most focused. We'll use that like pressure and like thrive in those moments. I remember one of the papers that I wrote in college, I wrote overnight the night before it was due, like literally started it and finished it overnight the night before it was due. And I got the best grade out of any paper that I'd written.
That's fair.
But did I sleep? No. Is it healthy? Absolutely not. But like, but that's what I was kind of like.
My question is, was it your best work? Like, you know.
I actually think that was my best work in college.
That's fair. I guess I'm wondering, you know, and I don't mean to like interrogate your thesis statement here. I just wonder like, I guess for me, I should just say this. I don't know how you work. For me, when I also thrive under urgency and deadlines, but I thrive in a way that isn't synonymous with flourishing. Like I thrive in the sense of I actually get it done. And usually I'm like good enough at it that it's done pretty well. But yes. I've sometimes wondered like, wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be like led to my flourishing if I could have like devoted the correct amount of time to this and not waited till the last minute and only had last minute energy for it?
I think I have come to the realization over many, many years of working. One, I'm attracted to the same, like, just professions that have a lot of urgency and deadlines. Like, I think I thrive in those environments. But I think sometimes it is true that, oh, I'm, like, doing something last minute. I'm like, oh, shit, I should have started this earlier. I'm not going to, you know, this isn't going to be my best work. And sometimes it isn't. And I think it's really hard to tell which, and I should probably just plan on the, like, giving myself more time than I thought I would need. That's probably just generally true.
That's fair. So I'm curious about, I want to hear some honorable mentions in a minute, but one last thing. When you went through your Miles Davis journey, how did you process, like, Bitches Brew or, you know, In a Silent Way or Sketches of Spain? Like, did they feel like your mind was just being expanded every time you went on to the next record?
I honestly, like, I think I found those records less accessible. I don't think I had, to your point about classical music, I kind of see it in that genre where it's like, I don't think I had the ability to appreciate it yet. Mm. I think I came to those albums in terms of appreciation, at least a little bit later in life. For sure.
I remember going to On the Corner. I wanted to hear On the Corner because it was often talked about as a birthplace of electronic music. I don't know if it's the birthplace of electronic music, but that there were a lot of ideas that he was playing around with that would later resurface in electronic music. And so that was compelling to me. Like, I wanted to hear that. And it's all there. Like, he, you know, he was inventing things, creating things that were, you know, miles ahead, good grief, that were they're just light years ahead of what everybody else was doing. I remember hearing some of those records at the time, you know, when I was a teenager or whenever, and thinking like, this is better than the music that I listen to now. Like, this is better than that, you know, Space Hog album that I really liked. this is better than all the Red Hot Chili Peppers records that I own. And yet I kind of appreciated why it died. Like, why it couldn't sustain in a monoculture setting. Like, it was so intricate and nuanced and challenging that it's not super shocking to me that it didn't like flourish. It does seem like lots of amazing things have been built on the back of it. But I sometimes feel like I lament that we don't have that anymore. Like, it feels like there's not a ton of analogs for the type of work that Miles Davis was doing and had space to do in our popular musicians now. And he was a popular musician. Like, he was a beloved musician by many, many people. And so that's, I feel like we question. Don't have a lot of analogs.
What would be the analog? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's the analog is some like artists we've never heard of dropping their tracks on SoundCloud or something. But you're right. They like wouldn't have the popularity of Miles Davis in that era, you know, like wouldn't have the like credibility. You know, it's almost like, of Miles Davis in the same breath as like Andy Warhol, where he's like making art and half the time you don't know what it is, but everyone's still going to his parties. You know, like there's no SoundCloud artist that's doing that for for sure. Like, you got to build a following, and, you know, building a following online means playing things that people like for the most part. Mm-hmm. Trying to find an audience for something. And sometimes you can create an audience for new things, and sometimes it's really, really, really hard to do that.
I have often wondered, like, there was such a there's such a large group of the greatest musicians of all time living in the same place at the same time, producing the same kind of music. I've often wondered, like, what created that setting? Like, when I think about, you know, when I first discovered like John Coltrane records and Thelonious Monk and Charles Mingus, I love Charles Mingus. Yeah. You know, hearing all of that stuff, and then Bill Evans and discovering that all these guys all knew each other and played together and like pushed each other to some extent. And, you know, I actually prefer listening to John Coltrane on other people's albums because John Coltrane's solo work, Giant Steps excluded, but thinking about like Love Supreme, John Coltrane's solo work is so challenging and so intense that it's sometimes I find it a little hard to listen to, but there's no question that he is a genius, and he just like would show up on other people's records all the time. And it wasn't like, you know, dropping in like guest spots like Kendrick Lamar. Like these guys were all creating together. They were like building something together. And I've wondered like what led to that. What's the right word here? Like that incubation or that, that setting where so much flourishing was happening within this specific space at the same time.
Yeah.
Cause it had to be more than just like, these were preternaturally the greatest musicians ever. I think that's maybe true, but there was something that allowed them to flourish all at once.
There's been milieus like that of like artistic creation all throughout history, right? Like I'm thinking about Paris in like 30s and 40s and all the great writers that came out of that era, or more on the music side, like Brooklyn in the early 2000s and all that like new rock that was coming out of there. Like I feel like moments like that happen where it's just like there's something special about that place and that time that I'm sure there's like economic indicators and like other things about you know, why artists converge in the places that they do. But yeah, to be alive and in that era and one of those, we'll catch a wave at some point, Dave. Maybe we'll be in our 70s and we'll find ourselves in a like highly artistic like place where there's people are just making the most beautiful things.
Listen, I will still be recommending albums to my friends when I'm 70 years old. So
same,
just fine. All right, let's do honorable mentions real quick.
Before we get to that, I want to ask you just where jazz in general falls for you. Like, where do you grab for it in general, or do you like where's the genre? Because you definitely speak with this appreciation of it, similar to I do. But I think similar to me, if I'm reading you right, it's not necessarily a go-to genre necessarily.
It was at one point in my life. It hasn't been. I think something that is true is that it has been entirely subsumed by electronic music for me, because there are some. There's this record label called Pompa Records that I was going to talk about today in my recommendation, or you know, what I've been listening to this week. There's sort of this thing happening amongst a certain group of musicians that just really have my number. They just like are making music perfectly tuned to my ears. And I think over time, just like going so deep into electronic music and certain subgenres of that has in some way taken the space that used to be inhabited by jazz. I think I went to jazz for, I don't know if inspiration is the right word, but I went to jazz because I wanted to be in the presence of amazing musicians playing amazingly. And I appreciated that there wasn't necessarily the same type of song structure that I was used to with like modern rock. I appreciated that these guys could just follow their whims and see where we go. And the whole group is behind them. You know, there's always metaphors about jazz because they're true. Like there's sort of this rhythm section that's laying enough of a safety net that you can just do wild things on top of it. As long as you're staying within the same, you know, kind of playing field boundaries of the song that's being created. I really loved listening to these artists doing those things. And there are some records that I still put on pretty regularly. I still listen to Bill Evans' Sunday at the Village Vanguard as like a go-to sitting around the house record. Kind of Blue, you know, I'll throw that on any day of the week, and that's great. Mingus Ah-Um is one of my like that one feels really personal to me. Like I felt like it was mine for a long time. Do you remember like when we had AOL instant message names? Like we had to choose our like
course,
name.
Yeah.
So my name was Dave Ah-Um based on the Mingus yes. Ah-Um record.
That's excellent.
And I just remember really, really deeply loving those. And so, but yeah, something's shifted. I don't reach for it very often. And I'm not as interested in, I know that I've only scratched the surface of what is out there.
Yeah.
And I'm not super interested in going deeper with it. And that's probably to my detriment. And I don't know. It feels like it's over. And every now and then something new will happen. And I'll think like, whoa, like jazz music. This is cool. Like I've got a friend who makes really gorgeous music, who's a professional jazz musician. I really admire and respect the work that he does. And he put out an album a couple years ago. His name is Quentin Coaxum, if you want to look him up. I think the record was called You and I. I'll look that up real quick while I'm talking. You know, he's just a buddy of mine in Chicago, and he's making beautiful music. And so I assume there are thousands of other people making beautiful music, and I would really appreciate it if I gave it the time of day. I think a lot of it started sounding the same. I think a lot of it started sounding safe and kind of mass produced. You know, when I would listen to like Wynton Marsalis or, you know, kind of the more modern jazz giants, it didn't hit me the same way. It didn't feel as organic and as like edgy and like kind of like lightning in a bottle. It didn't feel like you just kind of stumbled into a room where some amazing musicians were coming up with something new. It felt like it had a sheen on it that I didn't like. There was a, you know, something in the production quality that I just didn't like. So I've just fallen away from it, but you know, I'm sure I'm missing out on a lot of amazing stuff.
I mean, I think it actually makes total sense that electronic has replaced it in your mind, because I think in a lot of ways, the, you know, people really pushing the envelope with electronic music now are like the jazz musicians of the 50s and 60s in the like pure creation they were playing with. And I think that they would actually appreciate that now out of the like electronic musicians, because I think what's true is that as it became popularized and especially as it became embedded in popular culture. I mean, how many like jazz songs can you kind of like be like, oh yeah, that song, even if you don't know the name of it, because you've heard it in like four or five movies.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think some of the stuff, especially some of the stuff from the 50s and 60s, has just gotten so overused in popular culture. I mean, maybe not Bitches Brew, you know, like, but some of the like more accessible stuff, that it kind of lost an edge, where it used to be something really dangerous. And I think today, I think electronic is at least in the mix of something that still feels dangerous, not accessible to everyone, still experimental in a lot of ways. Still, you know, of the people, if that makes sense. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah. By the way, Quentin's album is called You and I. So go check that out.
Nice. I will just we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. I'll just say I also don't reach for it for some of the same reasons, although I don't think I went quite as deep on it as you did. I don't think I went much past Miles Davis, Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, I love. I did listen to some like more recent stuff, like Heliocentrics, I think it's really cool. But you know, you're right. It's just the more modern stuff doesn't surface for me that much. So I don't even know, like I'd have to really go digging for it.
Yeah, that's true. Every now and then Pitchfork will recommend something that's in kind of a jazz vein, and I'm always happy to listen to it. I always think like, okay, here we go, let's do this. And it's always wonderful. And then I just don't listen to it again for 4 months. You know, there was a record a couple years ago that was like a Floating Points and Pharoah Sanders record that was my favorite record of the year. But it wasn't, I don't know, it was jazz, but it wasn't exactly, I don't know. It lived in a different space. It didn't feel like it was part of a larger conversation, you know, of other music that was out at the time. So.
Yeah,
man. Tell me your honorable mentions.
Yeah, well, I already mentioned a couple of them. I mean, for this particular topic, I definitely like looked at my catalog of jazz in terms of what would be up there with A Birth of the Cool. I think Bitches Brew definitely came to mind, and I have put that on when I'm working sometimes. But I think I find the more experimental nature of it more distracting. I actually found Bitches Brew really fun to listen to on the train when I was commuting years ago, and I'd be like, oh my god, he's playing music like my brain works. So I thought of that, but then I also thought of like Minor Threat. I think just in general, like Minor Threat, Misfits, some of that great hardcore punk is a go-to for me when I'm working. I ended up not going that direction because I didn't think that it would necessarily be the same vibe that everyone would want to have while they're working. And I think that Birth of the Cool, I think anyone can like put that on and enjoy it. And to me, I think get work done. And I think that I also thought of some like more popular, probably still a little more indie, albums like Passion Pits, Manners came to mind for me. Again, something that's like more upbeat and energetic and bright, that kind of sets the right vibe for me while I'm working. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned that there's a million early 2000s electronic records that I could put into this scenario. I'm just going to do a list. Here we go. Ready? It's like, yeah, Bonobo, Thievery Corp, you know, Kruder and Dorfmeister, Pete Rock's Pete Strumentals. Have you ever listened to Pete Strumentals?
No, but I love that name.
You know, it's just great hip hop, instrumental hip hop stuff. Tosca, Telefon Tel Aviv, who I somehow keep mentioning on this podcast. I don't listen to Telefon Tel Aviv that often, but they've come up like four podcasts now. Cinematic Orchestra and Peace Orchestra, two different bands, different vibes, but all great. Amon Tobin, basically all of the Ninja Tune releases. If you just go look for the Ninja Tune label in the early 2000s, everything could
You're
fit
making
into
that
a
up.
Category.
That's not a real thing.
No, Ninja Tune.
You just made that up.
No, it's the best. And then, you know, classic stuff like Ulrich Schnaus. You know, there's a treasure trove. Pick your poison. You know, and if it's Album Leaf and Tycho, if that's your vibe, do it. Go for it. You get no judgment from me other than there are better things than Album Leaf and Tycho. And I like Album Leaf and Tycho, but there are better things out there. They just seem to be at the top of every list, like listicle on the internet.
I know.
Of like music to listen to at a concert.
I think I've had the experience of putting on Album Leaf and trying to work and being like, nope, this is not, can't do it. Nope, this is not the vibe I'm looking for.
Yeah. So canon. Let's talk canon for a second. Mushroom Jazz does not go in my canon, although I, if there was a place for YouTube's lo-fi hip-hop beats to study to, if that could go into my canon, it might. just by like amount of time spent with it. But no, Mushroom Jazz not in mine. Birth of the Cool in yours?
Oh, Birth of the Cool is definitely in mine. I think that Birth of the Cool and Kind of Blue, just surprise, surprise, both of those would make it into my canon, I think. But again, just for pure repeatability, I think I've probably, at least in recent years, listened to Birth of the Cool more, and just such a seminal album. I mean, how can you not put it in the canon? So it's going in there for me.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm ready to put Kind of Blue in the canon tonight, only because I know that record's going to come up again on a future conversation. Sure. So
is that what it means? If you put it in the canon, we can never talk about it
again?
No.
It just means that I want to like properly anoint it at some
point. Is the canon like a vault and we put it in and then we close the door and then you're like, you're not able to access the vault anymore?
It's a museum that you can walk down the halls to, but we have to give each record its due. We can't put Kind of Blue in the canon when we haven't spent 30 minutes talking about Kind of Blue.
Yeah,
we
that's
have to,
fair.
So tonight we can put Birth of the Cool in the canon. Absolutely.
We're gonna put Birth of the Cool in the canon, and then we're gonna put Kind of Blue at the door to the canon ready to be talked about.
Yeah, so send us a topic that Kind of Blue fits for, and yeah, it will be in the canon. All right, let's talk quickly about what you've been listening to this week, because I have a super weird pick for this, but I want to hear what you've listened to first.
Dave has a super weird pick.
No, but
for
this
his
is like
music.
A weird, this is a weird circumstantial pick. Like it's, you'll hear it.
I'm gonna go with an album that we were talking about that came up when we were talking about Donnie Trumpet recently, and you and I both were like, "Oh, Nico Segal has a new album called Tell the Ghost Welcome Home." Just again, I love it when these titles are so good. I'm really enjoying it. I've been putting it on this week. It's got the same kind of vibe as Surf, in that it's like, speaking of jazz, it's got jazz elements, but it's like jazz mixed with hip hop. And then you throw in some like cameos by Jamil Woods, and some, you know, some other great Chicago artists. So, put it on. I've been finding this really fun to put on in the background while I work this week, actually. So, you know, like in a few weeks, maybe this will be my coffee shop vibe. Who knows?
I got out of love, but you were lying so far.
I want to check that album out. I, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week already, but I really like him and the music he's made in the past. So it's been an all jazz night for us. Mushroom Jazz and Birth of the Cool. And now I'm going to break it. The thing that I have been listening to this week, although along the same lines as the conversation we've been having. So when I say that I love Pompa Records, it means something to me. That record label means something to me. And DJ Cozy is like, for my taste, I'm not necessarily prescribing this on the world, but for my taste, the most exciting musician in the world right now. Every time he releases something, I think like, oh, this is so special. And there's something he's tuned into that nobody else seems to be. And it's this kind of like an intersection of whimsy and hauntedness and and beauty and like deep fun. Like it's very inspired by disco, and it's just everything he puts out, like the sounds that he makes, the way that he turns one thing into another thing is so cool to me. And every time he announces new music, I think like, oh, what if it's not as good? Like, what if it's not as good as the last one? And you know, both of his like full length, not both of his two last full length albums are easily in top 20 records for me of all time. I just love them so much. Anyway, he's producing this album with Royce and Murphy. That's been really exciting. So there's going to be some new DJ Cozy type music coming out, although it's a Royce and Murphy album first and foremost. However, he just this week announced that he's putting out a new record next year. And he's releasing a couple songs in the next month or so that is meant to sort of be an appetizer for that record. I'm not totally clear if those songs will be on the record, but they are meant to be sort of like, here's where my headspace is right now. Here's the type of music that I've been creating. He goes on and on about how he made this music at like a Benedictine monastery, lying on his stomach, doing heroin kebabs. I don't know what heroin kebabs are. They don't fit that within my sense of Benedictine monasteries, but to each his own, apparently. Anyway, the thing that I've been listening to this week over and over again is a 60, maybe 30 second snippet of this new DJ Cozy song that's coming out in a month that he put on Instagram. And I just keep putting it on repeat because it blew my mind. Like I was like queuing it up and I was like, okay, let's see if this is cool. And oh my gosh, like I literally got chills all over my spine and my neck. It was such an incredible oral experience for 30 seconds that like I just keep clicking on it like you would like an iTunes preview. Like I just keep listening to it over and over again. And I'm not recommending this to anyone. I'm not telling you to go rush out and listen to a 30 second snippet of DJ Cozy. But if I'm giving an honest answer of what I've been listening to this week, it's kind of this.
I want to recap for our listeners.
Yeah,
I want to recap for our listeners. You are recommending a 30 second
not recommending
clip on Instagram. You are recommending a 30 second clip on Instagram as your listen of the week.
That's
did
right.
Did I get that?
Straight? That's correct. I mean, you know, I could talk about Queens of the Stone Age for a minute. I've been spending more time with that record. That's a great album. I like it.
Nice.
It sounds like classic Queens of the Stone Age and is, you know, as good as anything they've put out recently. And it was a slow build for me, but now I'm into it. There's gonna be some way back to burn. I probably put it in their top five records. Out of the gate. So if you need like a real full-throated recommendation this week,
it's like if I must spend give some time like a with Queens of the Stone Age album.
But I gotta tell you, Caleb,
album focused podcast. Yes, what
I gotta tell you, the second that DJ Cozy put this 30 second snippet out, I didn't listen to Queens of the Stone Age anymore that week. Just being honest, man, if I can't bring my full self to this podcast, what is it for?
You know what? Me and all the listeners at home love your passion, Dave. I think that has been a common point of feedback.
I've had significant fights with people, not fights. I've had significant arguments with people about putting DJ Cozy albums so high on my year end lists. They're like, really? This? I'm like, yeah, man. This is it. This is as good as music gets in the 2020s.
The heart wants what it wants. I have been enjoying the singles coming off this Royce and Murphy album so far.
Yeah, so Fader is maybe on a cool one. Yeah, check out the video for Fader. I think I said that last week. The video for Fader is really, yeah, really wonderful.
Fun.
All right, man. Well, we will be back at it next week. Sincerely, send us your topics because they will become fodder for future episodes. And we'll certainly shout you out if you want to be shouted out, and we'll let you even pick a record if you have one to pick.
That's right.
So, you know, send us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Of course, give us some positive ratings on iTunes or Apple Podcasts if you are inclined to. We really appreciate it. Thanks for a great launch so far. Yeah. And we will see you next week.
Yeah. Tell us what 30-second clip you would like us to review next week.
Best 30-second clip for Dave's mind expanding. It's a 12-part podcast, 6 hours each. It's
actually only like 6 minutes long.
Just wait till the actual song comes out. And I just spend the whole all podcast this makes talking it
in.
About it.
All this is in.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness.